Section 3, Huey Long in the United States Senate. As you read, look for Huey Long's unconventional behavior as a new U.S. senator, Long's attempts to broaden his national appeal while still controlling state politics, reasons for the popularity of the Share Our Wealth program, the death of Huey Long and attempts to continue his legacy. Terms, Great Depression, Share Our Wealth program, grassroots support. In 1930, Long ran for one of Louisiana's two United States Senate seats. He won the election but refused to be sworn in until he could control the election of his replacement as Louisiana's governor. Long helped his completely loyal friend O.K. Allen win the governor's race in 1932. With the man he could control in the governor's office, Long, who now referred to himself as the Kingfish, took a train to Washington, D.C., where he was sworn into the U.S. Senate on January 25, 1932. He was now in the nation's capital, but he had his sights set on the White House. Senator Long goes to Washington. There was a tradition in the U.S. Senate that new members worked behind the scenes to learn how the institution functioned. In so doing, senators gradually gained influence by working cooperatively with other members. Long had no intention of deferring to other senators with more seniority. Displaying a familiar pattern of behavior, Long simply ignored the established rules or found ways to go around those who tried to block his ideas or ambitions. Long spent much of his time giving speeches to the American people rather than to his fellow senators. He also engaged in long floor speeches called filibusters, which blocked legislation he opposed and, not incidentally, raised his profile even further among the nation's voters. Broadening his appeal. Late in 1932, Long took his fleet of campaign trucks, complete with loudspeakers that broadcast his messages, to Arkansas. There, he held rallies and gave speeches supporting the re-election of fellow Senator Hattie Caraway, who had been appointed to the Senate to finish her recently deceased husband's term. She sat next to Long in the Senate, and there did seem to be a genuine rapport, relationship, connection between the two. However, Long did almost nothing without calculating its political impact. He also believed that helping Caraway win would show that he could influence elections beyond his home state. Caraway was considered a long shot, but with Long's help, she won the race, making her the first woman ever elected to the U.S. Senate. Long's influence beyond Louisiana also scored a victory. Louisiana during the Great Depression. By the time Long was sworn into the Senate, the nation had been in the throes, hard, painful struggle of the Great Depression for 3 years. The Great Depression was the name given to the severe economic downturn that began with the stock market crash of 1929 and continued into the 1940s. In October 1929, the stock market, which had risen to dizzying heights in the previous months, crashed. The values of stocks plummeted, and in an instant, much of the nation's wealth disappeared. Unemployment rates skyrocketed, and many Americans suffered extreme poverty. Farm families were hit especially hard. In a largely rural and agriculture-dependent state like Louisiana, this meant that the poor faced economic challenges that they could not overcome, no matter how hard they worked. And while farm families could usually grow enough to feed themselves, people who lived in cities had no places to plant gardens. Many families literally came close to starvation. Share Our Wealth. In the midst of the Great Depression, Long's populist messages appealed to the poor. This was much the same way his ideas had appealed to those who felt vulnerable after the 1927 flood. Long took to the radio, which by the early 1930s had become an important national medium for politicians. Long used every opportunity he could to promote his proposals for ending the Depression. He created a set of ideas called Share Our Wealth. Although his proposed solutions varied with time, in general, the Share Our Wealth program focused on making certain that no American was too rich or too poor. Long felt that all Americans should have a home, enough food to eat, and security in their old age when they were too old to work. Long argued that the money to secure those goals could be acquired through higher taxes on the nation's wealthiest citizens, especially multimillionaires. Economists would describe Long's program as a redistribution of wealth. In a period of widespread poverty and economic distress, Long's ideas about income redistribution were very appealing to large segments of the nation's poor. Share Our Wealth societies sprang up around the country. They could be formed very easily, and membership cost nothing. They also provided a forum for people to talk about their problems and to discuss possible solutions, many of them proposed by Long. As the nation's poverty worsened, Long's popularity and appeal grew. With a nationwide network of more than 4 million members and a mailing list that exceeded 7 million by 1935, Long had begun to think seriously about the final step in his long-term plan, a run for the presidency of the United States. While Long's speeches, radio broadcasts, and Share Our Wealth societies were yielding grassroots support, support from ordinary people, support from the ground up, around the country, Senator Long was also still actively controlling politics in Louisiana. During his term in the Senate, he returned to Louisiana regularly to oversee legislative sessions and to ensure that his priorities and plans received legislative passage. Then, as soon as a session was done and he had accomplished what he wished, Long would return to Washington, D.C. Public Works. Governor O.K. Allen continued the ambitious program of public works that Long had begun in his term as governor. Besides the construction of new roads, Long oversaw the construction of the state's first bridge across the Mississippi River, which was completed near New Orleans in 1935. Long also led the drive for the construction of a new state capitol building. The soaring 34-story capitol was impressive at the time of its completion in 1932 and remains the nation's tallest capitol building. Long also found less visible ways to extend the success of his programs. More than 3,500 miles of paved roads and concrete highways were constructed during Long's term as governor, but the roads were narrower, 18 versus 22 feet wide, than the national standard. Many people were also receiving payoffs or kickbacks all throughout the process. One historian estimates that roads cost taxpayers 4 to 5 times as much as they should have because of all the graft, illegal or unfair gain. Was Long a dictator? The notion that Huey Long was more of a dictator than an elected official had some basis in fact, because he was serving as U.S. Senator while still controlling virtually all the decisions and actions of state government. Even as Long was attracting supporters from around the nation, he was also creating many enemies at home. Most of the state's newspapers were critical of Long. When he could not control them, he started his own newspaper, the Louisiana Progress. As Long's political profile rose, so did concerns that his dictatorial tactics might actually spread beyond the state to the nation if he were elected president. Talk of his assassination arose among those who felt he was dangerous, not just to democracy in Louisiana, but potentially to the entire nation. Whether it was fear or caution that drove the decision, Long always traveled with several armed bodyguards. He even created a state police force called the Bureau of Investigation, which he essentially directed and used in whatever way he saw fit. Long's final days. There was no doubt about Long's ultimate ambition by August 1935 when he announced his intention to seek the presidency in 1936. The following month, Long returned to Louisiana to run a special session of legislature he had called. On Sunday evening, September 8th, Long was in the state capitol giving orders and speaking with legislators before the session's opening the next morning. As the senator was hurrying around a corner in the lobby, a young surgeon named Carl Austin Weiss approached Long, whose fast pace put him a few steps ahead of his bodyguards. Many believe that Weiss wanted to confront the senator about pending legislation to remove his father-in-law, the anti-Long judge Benjamin Pavey, from office. Long's bodyguards later testified that Weiss shot the senator at point-blank range. Long turned and ran toward a nearby stairwell while the bodyguards opened fire on Weiss, whose body was riddled with 60 bullet wounds. He died immediately. Long was taken to the nearby Our Lady of the Lake Hospital, where surgeons were able to remove a bullet. Despite this success, surgeons did not detect a nick to the kidney that continued to bleed internally. The mighty politician passed away in the early morning hours of September 10, 1935. Despite his many enemies and controversial reputation, Long's supporters considered him a hero of the common people and were deeply saddened by his death. Tens of thousands of mourners made their way to the Capitol to view his body before his burial on the Capitol grounds. In future years, a huge statue that represented Long's accomplishments was placed over the site. At the time, few questioned Weiss's guilt in Long's death, making it an assassination. However, evidence uncovered in recent decades has raised questions about Weiss's guilt. For instance, photos taken of Weiss's body right after the shooting show no gun in his hand or in the vicinity of his body. The gun he supposedly used to shoot Long also had an irregular chain of custody. It was discovered in the personal possession of the daughter of a policeman involved in the initial investigation of the assassination. It was finally returned to state custody in the 1990s. These and other issues have raised the possibility that Weiss might have approached the senator to confront him, and in response, Long's bodyguards opened fire and shot Long accidentally. No conclusive proof for this theory has ever been uncovered. Long's successors. Even before Long's burial, discussion about who would or could succeed him and maintain control of state government got underway. Governor O.K. Allen planned to take Huey's seat in the Senate, but died of a heart attack before he could take office. At that time, Rose Long was appointed to the seat until a special election could be held. There was also a scramble among Huey's loyal followers to decide who would run to fill the next term for governor. James A. Noe, a friend and business partner of Huey's, had become lieutenant governor in 1934 when John Fournette resigned that office. After O.K. Allen died in January 1936, Noe served as interim governor from January through May. He had hoped to be the candidate of the Long machine in the regular election. However, through backroom dealing, Long's most powerful supporters backed a New Orleans judge named Richard Lesh. His main qualification was that he was a loyal Long supporter whom many in the background thought they could control. The Louisiana scandals. Lesh won the governor's office handily in 1936, but many of the problems and corrupt practices that had occurred during the Long era continued. Lesh and his cronies, close political allies, continued to allow favored associates to make profits from their dealings with state government. Members of the State Highway Commission routinely sold goods and services to the state for construction projects they were supposed to regulate. Lesh and others in power misappropriated construction materials for personal projects. They regularly used state workers to construct and improve their own personal properties and those of their friends. Lesh was even taking kickbacks on the purchase of state goods. This included receiving payment for each vehicle an Alexandria auto dealership sold the state. Similar kinds of corruption had been common under Long, but his total control of state government and an atmosphere of intimidation made it difficult for federal investigators to prove corruption while the Kingfish was alive. After Long's death, federal investigators slowly resumed investigations of corruption in the state. By 1939, they had documented and uncovered proof of the kind of widespread corruption that had come to characterize the way business was conducted in Louisiana. Such corrupt practices were so common, they came to be known as the Louisiana Way. In 1939, more than 250 federal charges were filed against Louisiana citizens and officials. Among those charged was Richard Lesh, who was forced to resign as governor. The following year, Lesh was found guilty of taking kickbacks and was sentenced to 10 years in prison. He was released after serving 5 years. Other Louisiana officials, including LSU President James Monroe Smith, also served prison time for misdeeds that enriched themselves at the expense of the state and its people. Huey Long's legacy. Huey Long's legacy was a mixed one for the people and the state. His successes included drastically improving the state's transportation system and extending educational opportunity and quality. Long also improved access to health care. Perhaps more important than any individual accomplishment was the way he fundamentally transformed the nature of state government in Louisiana. Before Huey Long's era, the state government had been small and largely focused on protecting property rights, especially for the wealthy. In 7 short years, Long transformed the size, nature, and orientation of Louisiana's government in ways that, for the first time, favored the state's common people. On the negative side of the ledger, many of these improvements cost the state far more than necessary. And while educational opportunity and access improved, Long's actions threatened freedom of expression, especially for anyone who dared disagree with him. His legacy was further tarnished by the ways he and those who followed him used their official positions to enrich themselves at taxpayer expense. Huey Long was certainly the figure most responsible for bringing Louisiana into the modern world, but he did so in ways that also damaged the state and its reputation across the nation. After Richard Lesh resigned as governor in 1939, Lieutenant Governor Earl K. Long, Huey's younger brother, was sworn in to finish Lesh's term. As this event symbolized, the state was hardly done with Longism. As Louisiana entered the 1940s, Earl Long and the ideas and practices begun by his brother continued to be part of the state's political, social, and economic life. However, as the 1940s began, events far beyond Louisiana changed the state and the nation profoundly in the decades to come. Special feature: the Great Depression in the United States. The period of extreme economic hardship that began in 1929 in the United States had several causes. The economies of many countries in Europe had been suffering since the end of World War I in 1918. For the time, the United States avoided such problems. In fact, the early 1920s were a period of strong economic growth in the United States. New technologies allow manufacturers to produce large quantities of goods efficiently. Consumer goods, like fashionable clothing, household appliances, and even cars, became widely available and affordable for many people by the early 1920s. Consumers could even buy large items, like cars, over time on credit. Many people were willing to pay interest, which added to the cost, rather than wait until they could save all of the money in advance. In anticipation of selling more and more goods over time, manufacturers began to produce more goods than they could sell. There was also significant economic growth in the nation's financial sector during the 1920s. Banks were lending freely. The remarkable gains in the stock market made many people want to become involved in buying stocks, often with borrowed money. This created even more growth in the stock market. Many businesses and individuals overextended themselves in the pursuit of profit, believing that stock prices could only go up. That optimistic belief came to an end in October of 1929. Although the structural problems that led to the Great Depression had been building over time, many people point to Tuesday, October 29, 1929, Black Tuesday, as the official beginning of the nation's worst economic crisis to date. That day turned into more than a decade of economic suffering that came to be called the Great Depression. President Franklin Delano Roosevelt was inaugurated President of the United States in early 1933. Roosevelt was determined to use the government to help people deal with widespread unemployment and the hunger and poverty that followed. At one point, the nation's unemployment rate reached 25%. People in cities, even people who had been wealthy before Black Tuesday, had little choice but to stand in line for food at soup kitchens. While people in rural areas could grow much of their own food, their lives were also affected by rapidly falling farm prices. Many small farmers and sharecroppers in Louisiana still raised cotton. At the beginning of the Depression, cotton was selling for 25 cents a pound. By 1932, its price had fallen to 5 cents a pound. Roosevelt proposed a large number of government programs designed to provide immediate relief for the poor and to help the economy recover by providing jobs. For example, young single men could join the Civilian Conservation Corps, CCC. CCC boys lived in camps and worked to improve the nation's infrastructure and its national parks. Family men could seek jobs through another program called the Works Progress Administration, WPA. Like the men in the CCC, some WPA employees worked on roads and bridges. The WPA also paid artists to paint murals in public buildings and to document the nation's people through photography. It paid writers to collect oral histories and to gather historical material for a series of state and city guides. WPA employees in Louisiana wrote and published a guidebook called the New Orleans City Guide in 1938. They followed it in 1941 with Louisiana, a Guide to the State. President Roosevelt's programs to provide relief and employment were known collectively as the New Deal. Although its programs were numerous and varied, the nation recovered slowly. Full economic recovery took until the mid-1940s and was generated in large part by the manufacturing and economic activity that resulted from our nation's involvement in World War II. Why do you think the CCC provided jobs for young single men but not for young single women?